Insights into Jesus' childhood and family life. This came by Medium, Beatrice Brunner, 1910-1983. Deep Trance Medium for the World Beyond. When he took on human incarnation, he became fully a human in every way. This also applies to Jesus' childhood. He grew up in a family with brothers and sisters, and he behaved like other children and adolescents. Only as he grew up did Jesus distinguish himself by a special devoutness and a certain intelligence. Len, dear brothers and sisters, I recognize your longing, and I am also aware of all that you would like to know. But I will not give an answer to all that you would like to hear. I only wish to do that which raises you spiritually, which strengthens and elevates you inwardly, which is of spiritual benefit to you. There are, of course, many things you would like to know, but they would not serve your personal spiritual salvation in any way. Fundamentally, it is about each individual's personal spiritual salvation. You should come here to edify yourselves inwardly, to become inwardly strengthened, in order to go out into your world again with renewed courage to face life, with a renewed zest for life. It should not simply be that you say to yourselves, "Well, that was interesting." Many things may be interesting, but they are of no use to your soul. I could tell you interesting things, but it would not serve your spiritual salvation in any way. I wish to edify your soul and will now try to go back to the time of Jesus Christ. I will tell you about the scene, what I experienced and saw. I would first like to go back to Jesus' younger years, but not for the entire evening. I will also present several things that are not to be found in the scriptures, because they were destroyed, things, however, that human beings used to know about. What I say and explain to you was once collected and compiled, but it did not fit into the structure that was created back then. So that there should be no errors in this respect, it was thought best to consign it immediately to the flames, then nothing more would remain. Yes, unfortunately that is what happened, but nevertheless, it is not destroyed. One can indeed do this in a physical sense, one can burn paper, but one cannot destroy the truth. After all, Christ promised at that time, "I will send the Spirit of Truth, and He will teach you about all these things." Cf. John 14:16 to 17:26. With these words, however, Christ primarily meant that what he had given in his symbolic language, which the people of those times had not understood, would be explained. And, indeed, this is also what we explain to you. It is essentially a great pity that precisely in Christian teaching such important things are simply no longer to be found. This includes accounts from the time of Jesus' life with his family. There were also records of how the family lived. Although Holy Scripture explicitly refers to his brothers and sisters, who would wait for him, who would look for him on occasion, people did not want to accept that Jesus had siblings. And this belief that he could not have had siblings simply does not fit into the teachings of Jesus Christ. People were crafty enough and figured out a word, I would like to say, in order to twist all these things. They simply made cousins out of his actual siblings. Well, in that case there should also be more detailed explanations about these relatives. Where did these supposed cousins come from and whose children were they? How were these cousins related? This should also have been described in more detail, but it was not done. Instead, people did not want Christ to have had siblings and simply twisted things accordingly. Had he not had any siblings, we could not then speak of his family and how he lived together with his brothers and sisters. But it did not fit, and that truly is a shame. And yet it is stated in the Holy Scriptures, and you can look it up, Christ had siblings, Matthew 12-4, Mark 3:32, 6-3. Among the Jewish people of that time there were many families with a lot of children. A married couple without a child was, so to speak, a disgrace. It was completely natural for there to be 10 or 15 children in a family. A family's reputation was even raised by such a large number of children. It was a matter of course, there simply had to be lots of children in a family. I would like to return to the following in passing. During the time that Christ taught, He would also be followed by children, and that did not suit the grown-ups, because these children were no better behaved than today's children. They, too, were impetuous and meddlesome. They tagged along, they harassed people and basically bothered those who were following Christ. So, the adults wanted to chase these children away. Christ defended them and said, "Let the children come to me, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Matthew 19:14. These words, "theirs is the kingdom of heaven," also have their significance, their great significance. Well, I do not need to give the explanation of it now. When it is necessary or appropriate, you will certainly receive the explanation in due course. So, there were children, and in Jesus' family there were also brothers and sisters. Jesus was the eldest. In those days, it was also the case that the eldest child would have to watch over and take care of their younger siblings. After all, the mother was usually busy in the home, there was always an infant lying in swaddling clothes. I would like to add the following explanation, which can also be confirmed. At that time, people did not live in such large houses as they do today. They had simple, small houses. They inhabited perhaps just one floor or, if they were doing well, two floors. Reputable families naturally had beautiful buildings and gardens, but there were many more poor people, and they really lived very humbly and poorly. At any rate, you would not be happy to have to live your whole life in such a house or in such a hut. That is simply how it was in the early days. There was not this wealth that has amassed over time. People were poor, and work was not as varied as it is today. I actually do not need to give detailed explanations on this. Indeed, you can look around this world for yourselves and see how things stand. Then you will find confirmation that in many places things have not changed all that much, unfortunately. Precisely because there was not much space for the children to stay at home, they went outside. They were in the courtyards or elsewhere on the street. They went wherever something was going on, some kind of entertainment. So, they would leave home, it did not bother them in the slightest to walk to the neighboring village. The children would spend the whole day amusing themselves in the streets, so to speak. The parents did not particularly need to worry about their children, they would return home when they were hungry. But the table was not laid as handsomely and as carefully and punctually as you are accustomed to today. This depended entirely on the material situation of such a family. Back then, there were also people who went hungry, living on what they could glean from the fields. It would sometimes be good for people to imagine themselves back in those times in order to become a little more modest. Well, Jesus and his siblings also lived in the way I just described. For it is said, "He became fully a human in every way." Hebrews 2:17, and this also applies to his childhood. He, too, went out into the streets with his brothers and sisters, and, moreover, he would sometimes squabble with them. Jesus' mother sometimes had to rebuke him because he had not looked after his younger siblings in the way she had told him. He was a child like any other, he, too, could be forgetful, and he would play by himself and went where he pleased. He was often scolded by his parents for this. This is how he lived in the family. The children grew up, and Jesus was the eldest. But as he grew, he distinguished himself somewhat from the others, on the one hand by a particular devoutness and also by a certain intelligence, if I may express it in such words. At that time, if at all possible for the parents, they would try to educate the eldest son in order to furnish him with essential knowledge, namely, how to read and write. Jesus was the eldest, and Mary came from a respected family. The fact that she came to Joseph at a young age has already been explained to you, I do not need to go into this. Mary still had a clear memory of all that had happened when Jesus was born. She knew in her heart and soul that something special would become of Jesus, that he was destined for something special. But she did not fully know the exact significance of the words that had been spoken back then. Mary was a devout Jew, and she lived according to the Jewish faith. She remembered the various conversations and experiences she had had, but she was unable to interpret them. She did not know what would become of Jesus in the future. But she sensed that something special was planned for him. It was a matter of course that Jesus also received special attention from his mother. His other brothers and sisters saw that he was occasionally given special rights. He was given special preference by his mother, which immediately made the others jealous. They objected to the fact that he was permitted such and such while they were not. Such things are entirely natural. But people did not want to record this in scripture for Christendom. Indeed, they took issue with the idea that Jesus had siblings. Had they conceded this, many would surely have come to the thought, then he was just like any other child after all. Perhaps doubts and questions would have arisen, and they would then have been unable to make him into what they eventually did. Many things were therefore concealed in this regard, and that is really not right. It would mean something to many seekers to know about this, the truth of Jesus' circumstances. This should really be entirely normal and self-evident. There are so many human beings who do not accept Jesus Christ as the Redeemer. They do not believe in him, they do not believe he is the King of God's spirit world. But in revealing this to you, I am not saying anything new. People did not want to acknowledge these things, and this is also a reason why they did not want Jesus to have been allowed any siblings. The time will come, however, when the truth will penetrate. Indeed, a start has been made, even if it still takes decades or centuries before human beings are just a little willing to engage with it. They will then take it for granted that it must have been like this, and they will begin to read the Bible differently, to understand it differently. When mention is made of brothers and sisters, people will recognize that they are meant as such, and not merely as cousins. So, Jesus grew up in the family, and he went to work with his foster father. I must say foster father because Jesus Christ always spoke of his heavenly father. He found employment partly in the house where his foster father worked and partly in those houses where one was contracted to work. In between times, Jesus was taught to read and write. Mary had contact with scribes through her extended family, she thus made it possible for him to receive the necessary tuition. As regards his other brothers and sisters, it was only partially possible to teach them how to read and write. This was not to their liking, because they could see that Jesus had special rights. On the other hand, they knew that the eldest child was given special rights. The family did not live in conflict or strife on account of this. They were a devout family, they regularly attended the synagogues. In certain villages or small towns, there were prayer rooms that one would often visit in order to pray. And when Jesus came of age according to Jewish law, at 12 years old, he went to the temple. And he could read, he read to them from the holy books and elucidated various things, even though he did not recognize his task at that time. Indeed, Jesus was given inspiration, but he was not aware of his status. That would have been far too early, even for this young person. In the temple and wherever he gave explanations, people would marvel at him. People marveled at the elucidations he gave, although they doubted them because they were at odds with the teachings disseminated by the Jews. But Jesus stood by what he said. Jesus had his spiritual inspiration and his spiritual companions. He was protected by spirits of God, who stood by his side and who had watched over him from infancy, so to speak. They stayed close to him but did not intervene in his daily life. These angels simply had the task of protecting Jesus. And while he was still a boy, he was not clairvoyantly able to perceive them. He certainly lived with the sense that Joseph, who was called father in the family, was not his father. And when he revealed to his foster father and mother for the first time, "He is not my father," you can imagine that the family was greatly dismayed. The family was greatly dismayed as Jesus said of himself, "My Father is in heaven. God is my Father, and you are not my Father." This is what Jesus said. It was the beginning of this spiritual inspiration. The angels had to watch over and protect Jesus. The reason is obvious. When the message was proclaimed that humanity's salvation was at hand, Lucifer knew who the Savior was. He recognized this Jesus as the King of the spirit world. He knew God's anointed one. Human beings of that time and all physical things were under Lucifer's dominion. It was his kingdom, and he held sway. Heaven therefore made sure that nothing could befall Jesus. For precisely during Christ's lifetime, there were so many human beings possessed by evil spirits. You will also find confirmation of this in Holy Scripture, Mark 1:32, Luke 7:21. Lucifer wanted to rule his kingdom, and he did rule it before Christ entered the earthly realm to bring about redemption. He ruled it by constantly spreading so much misery and inflicting harm upon human beings. They were under his dominion. Certainly, there were times when prophets came to humanity, spoke about God, and taught the people. But these prophets would once again be recalled from this world. The might of Lucifer was far too great and far too strong. The prophets were unable to penetrate in the way they would have liked. They undoubtedly made certain spiritual gains during their lifetimes and were able to guide certain people to belief in God. But the world was simply under the sovereign power of Lucifer, and this Lucifer spread nothing but misery, suffering, and sickness. It was for this reason that angels of God remained close to Jesus in order to protect him. On no account was anything to happen to him. To be sure, Lucifer and his minions were often around Jesus, but they would retreat again, because they saw these angelic beings and did not dare to come any closer to him. Jesus hid his protection. I would now like to take a step forward in time, to the time in Jesus' life when, as a young adult, he was better able to establish contact with the world of God and also came into this spiritual vision through prayer. He had the desire to pray. And as he became aware, that is not my Father, and he told Joseph, "You are not my Father," the angels of God began to engage with him more. They did not appear to his earthly eyes from one day to the next, telling him who he was and what kind of task he had. Rather, they came closer to him very gently and very slowly. Very slowly, they gave him more insight. They spoke to him, but at first he thought, "It is the inner voice. I have an inner voice. I hear the voice of God, and it shows me the way." Eventually he heard who he was. And I must now describe this in greater detail. Christianity knows that Jesus was driven into the wilderness by a spirit, Mark 1:12. This was not the first time that Jesus had been in the wilderness to pray. Indeed, he would seek out stillness and solitude. Long before Lucifer believed he could bring him into temptation, Jesus had frequently gone into the wilderness and often stayed there for days at a time. During these times when he went into the wilderness to pray, angels of God came to him. He saw them, and they spoke with him. They told him who he was. "You are the Son of God. You are not Joseph's son. Your Father is in heaven." These were exalted spirits who were around him and who explained the cause of, and reason for, his human incarnation. After all, Jesus came into this world as a human being. He grew up and was not yet aware of who he was. He became fully human in every way. Only when he had grown to mental and physical maturity did the time come when he could bear all that he was told, all that he heard. At first, he simply listened. He was clairaudient after all. That is how it began. He was constantly given confirmation of what he had been told, and initially this happened in very ordinary ways. When he was busy somewhere or had left home to pray in silence, he would be told that he should now return home because people were waiting for him. He was told in advance what was happening at home, what kinds of conversations would be taking place when he arrived home. This was how it began, and this always represented a confirmation for him. This is how the spirits of God came to Jesus. The conversations became increasingly frequent, the language increasingly clear. He mostly kept this to himself, but he did try to tell his mother and his family some things. When he began explaining all that was wrong in Jewish teaching, his mother rebuked him. as he had to experience this but nonetheless continued hearing and receiving spiritual instruction, he began to keep quiet, because he had to realize that he was not understood at home. He would then stay away for days at a time, saying to his mother, "I am going into the wilderness to pray. Do not look for me." And his mother, who sensed that her son was destined for something special, let him go and did not hinder him. So, he stayed in the wilderness. There it was possible for him to hear more detailed conversations, or he was better able to hear them, and he also became clairvoyant. All of a sudden, as he was being spoken to, he could now see these beings in spirit. They stood before him so naturally, and he could speak with them and ask questions. This was always a significant experience for him. I would just like to remark on something from that time, on the meeting that took place during the time of Christ's ministry, when he took three disciples with him onto Mount Tabor, cf. Matthew 17:1-13. The disciples saw for themselves the visitations of Moses and Elijah. This was not Jesus' first experience, but it certainly was for the disciples. Christ wanted them to see and experience the true nature of his connection. Jesus had long since had this connection and these experiences. Various spirits of God came and instructed him. I can also say that they gave him explanations about the task that lay before him. And they promised him protection and guidance. When these angelic beings came, they brought him spiritual nourishment. He drank the wine and ate the spiritual bread offered to him by the angels. He ate and drank with the angels in the wilderness. Like so, he stayed there for days at a time and prayed. The angels would then disappear again and leave him alone. He was to reflect on all these things. He was told that he had a great task to fulfill and that this task would not be so easy to fulfill. At that time, Jesus did not suspect anything about the manner in which his task would be completed. But it was clear to him that during his time as a human being he held a special status, and it was entirely self-evident to him that he would fulfill his task. So, he returned home, did his work and helped in his foster father's house. Jesus also occupied himself elsewhere. He made himself independent when it came to work. Jesus was in demand because of his creative talent, his artistic abilities. In those days, too, there were rich people who wanted to build something special. Jesus would provide them with the plans and told them how it should be constructed. But I need not say anything more about this, I have already spoken about this in the past. So, he did his work. This would alternate, he would work for a certain period of time, and then, when he felt the longing, he would go into the wilderness once more. He desired to come into conversation with the angels of heaven. This continued until the moment came when he was told, "You must now set forth. Your time has now come." Excerpt from a lecture by Spirit Teacher Len, received in German through the medium Beatrice Brunner during the meditation week in Waldhaus Flims, Switzerland, the 23rd of September 1980, from Jesus' life between childhood and adulthood. As Jesus grew up, his strength and wisdom increased. Already at a young age, he disagreed with much that was taught in the Jewish religion. When Holy Scripture was read in his family, he raised many objections and interpreted it in a way they were not accustomed to. This led to differences of opinion in the family and brought him many reproaches. It was the same when, at the age of 12, he journeyed to the temple in Jerusalem with his parents. "Joseph, God bless you. My dear brothers and sisters, we also concern ourselves with your problems, with your wishes, with your worries. But, first and foremost, we would like to concern ourselves with Christian spiritual teaching and give answers to the questions you have. When you enter into a deeper conversation with your fellow human beings, the spiritually oriented person wishes to talk about spiritual things, about spiritual teaching. Perhaps they summon the courage and ask the other about their attitude to life in general, or they ask them what they think about life after death. The spiritual Christian, the spiritual believer, is very interested in such conversations. The other person, however, is not necessarily of the same opinion as the spiritual Christian with whom they are speaking. They express their point of view, their opinion. But those who are not inclined to speak about otherworldly matters will immediately try to change the subject. And we are of the opinion that a spiritual believer also has no right to forcibly convince the other, so to speak, and to lead them into conversations in this manner. They should possess the sensitivity to recognize when their neighbor has no understanding for it and then leave them be. For all spiritual believers, however, it will certainly be a success and a joy when they can share with a fellow human being what lives in their innermost and what their convictions are, and perhaps they even have the ability to help the other on their path in life, to show them the way, and to contribute something so that they can better understand their fate in life. And when the other, if they are interested in Christian teaching, is willing to listen. I also try to observe your thoughts and to satisfy your wishes. I therefore succeed in giving an explanation on problems that concern one person or another. Now, the time is once again approaching, the Christmas festival, when you have more opportunity than usual to speak in greater depth about spiritual matters with your neighbors. Many spiritual believers or listeners of mine, those who live with certain insights from spiritual teaching, still have so many questions that concern them. Indeed, there are still so many gaps in Christian teaching to which one would like an answer. And so one also concerns oneself with the question, what was actually happening with Jesus during the time between his 12th year of life and the beginning of his ministry? We hear nothing at all about Jesus in that time. How did he live? What went on during that time? Yes, dear brothers and sisters, I can tell you that there were also writings about this. But because people had not understood it, because they did not want to understand and accept it, they simply destroyed it, because they did not want to have it. On the other hand, there is still evidence of it, but one simply has no access to it. I could express it as follows: this evidence is walled up, so to speak. One can learn nothing about it, and one is not supposed to learn about it. Now, I have already spoken to human beings for so many years, and I have always attempted to become a little clearer on this subject, to express myself a little more precisely on that subject. And so, you have thus far been able to experience a coherent whole, and by virtue of this whole you came to certain insights and convictions, because I was also able to make comparisons. But I would now like to return to what I indicated, namely, what actually was going on with Jesus during the time between his 12th year of life and the beginning of his ministry. In doing so, I would also like to point out that this is not the only thing that people do not want to discuss and that they either simply destroyed or made impossible for believers to discover the truth about. Human beings think they can do such things. But was it not Christ who said, "I will send you the Spirit of Truth, and he will initiate you into all these things"? So, although those people want to make it inaccessible to Christians, one does have the possibility to hear the truth. Whether or not the listener is willing to accept it, that is up to them. I try to make comparisons. For precisely now, as the time approaches when Christendom's attention is again drawn to the birth of the Lord, so much is presented to Christians in such an obscure manner. They simply have to put up with it, and they do put up with it. But people today have become somewhat more discerning. Even the devout Christian is no longer so willing to simply believe under compulsion. They want to think for themselves, to consider for themselves whether such a thing is possible. I now wish to return to this time, of Jesus' youth, but first of all I would again like to point out what I have already indicated. And here I must explain it a little more precisely, be a little more exact, so that you get a better picture. Jewish law prescribed that a boy of 12 years, or upon reaching the age of 12, was to be presented by his parents in the temple, presented to the Pharisees and the scribes. That is nothing new to you. But I would like to explain the details. Precisely these details were once considered unimportant. This may have been valid in those times, but people back then did not consider that it would be important and significant for faithful Christians in the future, and people did not want to present it in all its details, in the way that I am now presenting it to you. What was prescribed by law, that a 12-year-old must be presented in the temple, also applied to Jesus. A special day and a special time would always be designated for this occasion. The boy who was now to be presented in the temple would be accompanied by people from the most varied locations or from far away. They had to walk for days to get to Jerusalem. Some of them lived in mountainous regions or other far distant places. You must try to imagine this. In those times, there were not these means of transportation that human beings have today. They had to travel on foot, they had to walk for days on end. And this also involved exertion. But they always made an arrangement, firstly with people from the same village, from the neighborhood and the surrounding area. They joined together in company, forming a traveling party, as it says in the scriptures, Luke 2:44. Of course, this is not meant in the way that traveling party is understood today. People in the immediate vicinity banded together. They also agreed among themselves at what time they would be at this or that place so that other families could join them. And then, in these larger groups, they would journey together to the temple or to Jerusalem. And why did they do this? They felt safer in company with each other. For in those times, too, there were thieves and bandits, and there were also wild animals. So, they walked together and felt safe. And so it was with Christ at that time. Every boy of that age was then presented to the Pharisees. He stated the name of his parents, that is, he first had to state his mother's name and then his father's. This had its reasons or has its reason, I will come back to this later. So, each individual had to present themselves to these scribes and Pharisees. This is how they were officially accepted into the congregation, and they were now a member of it. And these young people would already be given a task, each one received a task. These scribes came into conversation with them, and in doing so they could also establish what kind of ability this or that boy had. Accordingly, they assigned them a task. There were custodian duties inside and outside the temple, and it suited these young people well to perform this service. Indeed, they were active and could carry out many activities that would have troubled an older person. Thus, these young people were entrusted with tasks there. But it was not only a matter of custodian duties, these young people also had to pass on messages. They would have to deliver messages to villages or remote mountainous regions. This was also assigned to these young people. So, they became couriers, as you would call them today. They had to deliver messages here and there to members of the congregation. There were also sick people who had to be given a message or provided with assistance. These adolescents were used for such tasks. Among these youths, there were those who came from very poor backgrounds, and there were some who came from better backgrounds. Those who came from better backgrounds had a donkey with them, their journeys were thereby made easier. This was also the case with the parents who had to go to the temple in order to present their son. The noble people had their animals. But there were few of these, poor people predominated. They had to walk for days on end to reach Jerusalem. This was a day of honor, a special day for the family as well as for the boy in question. The son was officially presented in the temple, both he and his parents rejoiced. It is quite understandable that the conversations that took place there demonstrated the kind of intelligence, the kind of ability a boy had. I would now like to return to Jesus. Mary had a relative who worked in the temple and who taught Jesus how to read and write. Thus, already at the age of 12, Jesus was reasonably proficient in reading and writing. A boy would be asked questions, and he would give his answer accordingly. And questions were also put to Jesus. He, however, put questions to these scribes and to the Pharisees, and he gave them a completely different answer than the one usually given. Christians do not necessarily know that in the temple one would read from the holy book, and it would be passed from one to the other, and everyone proficient in reading had the opportunity to read a chapter and interpret it. Prophecies were written in this holy book, and all of them, so to speak, pointed to Christ and to the future. They were prophecies that the prophets had once made. psalms were contained therein, and in these psalms, which would also be sung, there was always a reference to the redemption, to the future. Jesus could answer them from his standing, from his higher insights, and he refuted what the chief priests were otherwise accustomed to saying. In general, everyone agreed on an interpretation. There was, so to speak, just one interpretation or one similar interpretation. And I would like to ask, why? People did not dare to offer an alternative interpretation, because this would have caused a stir, and others would not have agreed with it. Only the word of the chief priests and the scribes was valid. To contradict them was very dangerous. But Jesus, filled with power, gave them the answer, the right answer, but it was not accepted by the scribes. They initially said to themselves, "This is a young man, he will eventually come to other and better insights." He was not taken particularly seriously at first, only at a later date. For he appeared regularly in the temple, and he came into conversation with these Pharisees time and again, and he often read from the holy book and made them aware of so many things, including their errors. And this did not suit these Pharisees and scribes. But now I would like to go back to the time when Jesus, as a 12-year-old, stayed in the temple. It was customary then for people to find a place somewhere in the temple to sleep for the night. They slept on the floor, and the next day they would continue their conversations. They would perhaps leave the temple for a short time to eat and then return. And so it was with Jesus. He stayed there in the temple and answered the questions that the scribes put to him. The other young people, who had particularly looked forward to this special day, grouped together. They were interested in other things than simply what was set down for them in the law. The young people came together to talk. And, indeed, this was also a special occasion. They got to know each other, they introduced themselves and said where they came from. They had also been given their responsibilities. One person had custodian duties inside or outside the temple, another was to deliver messages, yet another was to fulfill their task in some other way with a family. So they discussed these things with each other and were full of joy. There were also all kinds of things to experience outside the temple. The festival did not only last one day, people celebrated in a Middle Eastern fashion, and these young people made the most of it. Eventually it was time to go home. People again arranged a time to set off, that is, when to leave the temple or Jerusalem, so that all families could make the journey home together. This was arranged beforehand, and they met up as agreed. The young people, however, were not willing to leave at the same time as their parents. The parents were completely fine with them staying a little longer, but it was expected that they would join the company later on. After all, the older people did not walk so fast, and these young people promised to catch up with them quickly. And that is just what happened. They stayed behind a little longer and then reached their parents later on. They had to walk somewhat quicker, but that was no trouble for them, whereas it was a different matter for the parents. And this is how it became possible. When Mary and Joseph saw the other young people coming, they suddenly realized that their Jesus was not with them. And so they had to ask everyone, this whole company. They searched and hoped to find Jesus, because it was, after all, nice being together in company. As they did not find him during their searches among these people, they had to start on the long road back again. And it was precisely Mary who possessed a higher knowledge in her heart and in her soul, but she was unable to express it. It was Mary, first and foremost, who then reproached Jesus. But I would now like to return to the question of why, during the presentation in the temple, the boy first had to state his mother's name and then the name of his father. It was the same with Jesus. He said he was the son of Mary and Joseph. Thus, it was also recorded in writing that he was the son of Mary. Someone else, for example, would have to say that he was the son of Elizabeth and his father was Jacob. He was the son of Elizabeth and Jacob. The mother was named first. Why? You should think about this yourselves. 1. In accordance with the law, this was entirely normal in those days. So, Mary reproached Jesus and said to him, "Your parents have been looking for you. You made us worry, and we have walked this long, long road back again." Jesus told his mother and the father, who was also there, "Well, did you not know I must be in that which is my father's?" Luke 2:48-49, that is what he said. He was, as he claimed, in his father's house. The other young people had enjoyed themselves and then left and caught up with their families again. But Jesus stayed behind in the temple, and his parents had to make the long journey back to find him. This is the truth, and Christians can understand this better when the circumstances are explained to them in greater detail. But why do people keep such things secret? They do not want it to be true. Thus, for Christians, the fact that Christ also had brothers and sisters must also not be true. Christ really did have siblings, but it must not be true. Even though it is recorded that when Mary had to search for her son Jesus, once again, I might say, she did not go alone, but took her children with her, so that Jesus was then told, "Your mother and your brothers and sisters are outside," Mark 3:32. And what did people make of these siblings? Relatives. For what reason was Jesus not allowed to have siblings? I am trying to explain it to you, precisely because in this respect the relationships at that time were set down in writing, but people do not want to accept it. The fact that Jesus grew in wisdom and strength as he matured is also recorded in Holy Scripture, Luke 2:52. And it really was so. Jesus was Mary's firstborn, and according to Jewish law the firstborn had special rights. Well, perhaps you can also imagine that in a family where one child has a privileged position, there are sometimes disagreements as well. There is no need to speak of conflict, I say, differences of opinion. This is completely understandable. This was also the case in other families at that time, and people did not conceal the fact. Why should it not have been the same in Jesus' family? There was thus a very strong possibility that his brothers and sisters harbored a certain jealousy of him. But I do not want to refrain from saying that this happened during the time when they were growing up. You should bring to mind your own children of that age, how they speak and act toward each other, whether everything always goes so smoothly. Why should it have been different in that family? It is clearly stated that Christ, be that as a young person, as an adolescent, or be that during his ministry, simply as a human being, was fully a human in every way. He felt the same as others. But Jesus, who grew in wisdom, also had to learn to be obedient to his Father in heaven, just as he had to be subject to his parents. It was also the case that temptations came upon him. This was permitted to the extent that he could be expected to overcome evil. He was brought up religiously according to the strictest Jewish faith, and there were many things he did not agree with. They prayed a lot in the family, and Jesus found fault with much regarding the reading of Holy Scripture. At home, too, he always had something to object to about this. He had to say to them, "That is not so." And although his siblings were younger than he, they just contradicted him. They had not yet grasped that Jesus was more than a biological brother. They considered him a biological brother. And Mary was in a difficult position. She often recollected the message that was given to her, and she clearly remembered the birth as well as the time when they had to flee. She also knew that this particular instruction had been given via a higher channel. And she knew that Jesus had an assignment, a mission, but she did not know the exact nature of it. So, on the one hand she had to defend the position of her other children, on the other hand she knew that there was something special about this Jesus. She tried, as best she could, to discuss this with Joseph, as best she could. But they were, after all, in a family with many children. In the land where Jesus lived, it was a matter of course that a family would have several children or a large number of them. To have no children, or only one child, was something of a disgrace. So why do people not want to accept this? They do not want to admit that this growing Jesus was occasionally the cause of disagreement among his siblings. This does not mean, however, that they lived in conflict with each other. Why can the whole truth not be told? Why can it not be pointed out that the growing Jesus, as it is said, grew in wisdom and strength with age, Luke 2:40. Indeed, he often left home, went into solitude to pray, and in this solitude he established the connection with his world. When he heard for the first time that he was the Son of God, it was not just a surprise for him, rather, it shook him to know that he had entered this human existence as the Son of God. The divine world had not told him all at once what kind of mission he had, all that he would have to do, what he would have to say to human beings. Only slowly, slowly was he prepared for his mission, for the time when he would step forth. But he was strengthened in good time, he was instructed from above. He had to be sure of his status, and he had to strengthen his faith in all that he was told. This was gradually explained to Jesus. Thus, he also said later on, during his ministry, "All that I tell you I have heard and seen from my Father." Yes, he not only remembered the time when he lived in his Father's kingdom, and, indeed, as king of the spirit world, rather, it was also clearly shown to his spiritual or earthly eye that he had seen his Father, that he had heard him, and that the Father had told him who he was. For he could only step forth and fulfill his mission because he was so inwardly strengthened and so deeply united in faith, only so was he able to fulfill his task. The spiritual side also wanted to create every possibility to convince him of who he was. He had to be convinced of this as a human being. To be sure, he felt urged from within and had this divine power in his entire being to better understand everything, but this alone would not suffice. Rather, as a human being he really had to enter into a closer relationship with the Father. He should receive every proof that he truly was the one and only Son of God. The prophets were so honored in the Jewish faith, and the events surrounding the prophets were told time and again. And so, it was also given to Jesus in this way. Just as he was to experience who he was from this side, Lucifer, on the other hand, could also make his attempts. Jesus was led into the wilderness, and in this wilderness Lucifer then came and tried to persuade him, "What you believe is not true. You have dreamed it." Thus, Christ also had to listen to the other side. But Christ had previously had his experiences with the Father, and he became convinced that he was the Son of God, and this belief could not be taken away from him. In saying this, however, I wish to express the fact that Christ had to go into stillness and solitude when he wanted to have this connection with the heavenly realm, and that Mary was very often worried because he had simply disappeared. He would leave home, and people often searched for him. They searched for him before he began his teaching mission. They searched for him during his teaching mission. Mary always feared for Jesus, because she sensed, one had also tried to help her understand through higher means, through inspiration, that this Jesus still had a difficult path ahead of him. And she knew that his entire teaching, which he constantly spread, was a nuisance to the Pharisees and the scribes and that they had the possibility to expel him and the entire family from the Jewish community. This would have been a major disgrace in those times. So, Mary was often afraid on account of Jesus. I would now like to add the following: Jesus had to work at home and earn money. He had to contribute his share to the family's upkeep. He, too, had to work. Now and then he found time, or he took the liberty, to go off. He regularly went to the temple, and, over time, people knew him. And they asked themselves, "Who is he anyway? After all, he does not have special parents. He is the son of Mary and Joseph, and there is nothing extraordinary about them." By the time Jesus began his ministry, he was already well known. Well, at home his brothers and sisters also grew up, but minor disagreements would arise time and again, because they simply had different religious views. Jesus' family once received an invitation to the wedding of a relative. The family set out and went to this wedding, and this has been recorded, for there is nothing in this to which one could take offense, to the contrary. It transpired that there was not enough wine. And Mary, who knew that Jesus had a higher task, went to him and said, Look, they do not have enough wine. With that, she wanted to say, surely you can, do something about it, try it. And Jesus replied to her, my time has not yet come, John 2-4. With these words, Christ expressed the fact that the divine world, with which he was constantly in contact, had not yet prompted him to step forth. Prior to this, it had clearly been explained to him that he would receive his mission when it was time to go forth in order to teach. That is why he could say, my time has not yet come. For he knew about the things he would accomplish, he had been told. But he said, the time has not yet come. Christ prayed in silence and waited for an answer. And he was given one. Thus, it was the first miracle, if one should speak of miracles. And so the whole gathering experienced it, and all were amazed. And how much greater was the amazement of his brothers and sisters. They now came to have a different attitude toward their brother, they had now truly received a proof from him. And this was not the last time, it was just the beginning. And so they began to listen more to their brother. They stopped these discussions, as they had previously engaged in them, and even allowed themselves to be taught by him. This was the beginning. For during the time that Christ was active, his siblings also stood by him. But they were constantly afraid. They were afraid of the authorities, and they were also scared that something would happen to their Jesus. So you can see, dear brothers and sisters, that much has been concealed in Christian teaching, because it could not be true. Why could it not be true that Jesus had other brothers and sisters? It is surely understandable, if other siblings had been there, then there must also have been, as was also recorded, disagreements now and then. But this does not detract from Jesus, his holiness, or his person. Everything was human after all. But it was precisely this humanness that people did not want to accept, indeed, it was not wanted from the very beginning. This humanness, as it really played out, should not have been as it was and was not allowed to be as it was. And why these lies? You should reflect on this. So, I always try to give you more detailed explanations, to present the truth to you. And I know I do not have it easy, not everyone believes me. Whether or not they want to believe is up to them. So, dear friends, I think I have given you enough to reflect on for tonight. Be guarded and protected from all distress and every danger. God bless you. Lecture by Spirit Teacher Joseph, received in German through the medium Beatrice Brunner at the Academy of Music in Lyric, the 17th of November 1979, one in his lecture of the 1st of December 1979. Spirit Teacher Joseph explained that a Jewish man whose marriage remained childless could take a second wife. This was also the case if a wife died without leaving any male descendants. But if the second wife gave birth to a boy, the family would, in due course, proudly go to the temple to have him admitted to the Jewish congregation. The boy then had to state the name of his mother first. In this way, it was immediately known which of a man's wives was the mother of the boy. From Jesus' life between childhood and adulthood, as Jesus grew up, his strength and wisdom increased. Already at a young age, he disagreed with much that was taught in the Jewish religion. When Holy Scripture was read in his family, he raised many objections and interpreted it in a way they were not accustomed to. This led to differences of opinion in the family and brought him many reproaches. It was the same when, at the age of 12, he journeyed to the temple in Jerusalem with his parents. Joseph, God bless you. My dear brothers and sisters, we also concern ourselves with your problems, with your wishes, with your worries. But, first and foremost, we would like to concern ourselves with Christian spiritual teaching and give answers to the questions you have. When you enter into a deeper conversation with your fellow human beings, the spiritually oriented person wishes to talk about spiritual things, about spiritual teaching. Perhaps they summon the courage and ask the other about their attitude to life in general, or they ask them what they think about life after death. The spiritual Christian, the spiritual believer, is very interested in such conversations. The other person, however, is not necessarily of the same opinion as the spiritual Christian with whom they are speaking. They express their point of view, their opinion. But those who are not inclined to speak about otherworldly matters will immediately try to change the subject. And we are of the opinion that a spiritual believer also has no right to forcibly convince the other, so to speak, and to lead them into conversations in this manner. They should possess the sensitivity to recognize when their neighbor has no understanding for it and then leave them be. For all spiritual believers, however, it will certainly be a success and a joy when they can share with a fellow human being what lives in their innermost and what their convictions are, and perhaps they even have the ability to help the other on their path in life, to show them the way, and to contribute something so that they can better understand their fate in life. And when the other, if they are interested in Christian teaching, is willing to listen. I also try to observe your thoughts and to satisfy your wishes. I therefore succeed in giving an explanation on problems that concern one person or another. Now, the time is once again approaching, the Christmas festival, when you have more opportunity than usual to speak in greater depth about spiritual matters with your neighbors. Many spiritual believers or listeners of mine, those who live with certain insights from spiritual teaching, still have so many questions that concern them. Indeed, there are still so many gaps in Christian teaching to which one would like an answer. And so one also concerns oneself with the question, what was actually happening with Jesus during the time between his 12th year of life and the beginning of his ministry? We hear nothing at all about Jesus in that time. How did he live? What went on during that time? Yes, dear brothers and sisters, I can tell you that there were also writings about this. But because people had not understood it, because they did not want to understand and accept it, they simply destroyed it, because they did not want to have it. On the other hand, there is still evidence of it, but one simply has no access to it. I could express it as follows: this evidence is walled up, so to speak. One can learn nothing about it, and one is not supposed to learn about it. Now, I have already spoken to human beings for so many years, and I have always attempted to become a little clearer on this subject, to express myself a little more precisely on that subject. And so, you have thus far been able to experience a coherent whole, and by virtue of this whole you came to certain insights and convictions, because I was also able to make comparisons. But I would now like to return to what I indicated, namely, what actually was going on with Jesus during the time between his 12th year of life and the beginning of his ministry. In doing so, I would also like to point out that this is not the only thing that people do not want to discuss and that they either simply destroyed or made impossible for believers to discover the truth about. Human beings think they can do such things. But was it not Christ who said, "I will send you the Spirit of Truth, and he will initiate you into all these things"? So, although those people want to make it inaccessible to Christians, one does have the possibility to hear the truth. Whether or not the listener is willing to accept it, that is up to them. I try to make comparisons. For precisely now, as the time approaches when Christendom's attention is again drawn to the birth of the Lord, so much is presented to Christians in such an obscure manner, they simply have to put up with it, and they do put up with it. But people today have become somewhat more discerning. Even the devout Christian is no longer so willing to simply believe under compulsion. They want to think for themselves, to consider for themselves whether such a thing is possible. I now wish to return to this time, of Jesus' youth. But first of all I would again like to point out what I have already indicated, and here I must explain it a little more precisely, be a little more exact, so that you get a better picture. Jewish law prescribed that a boy of 12 years, or upon reaching the age of 12, was to be presented by his parents in the temple, presented to the Pharisees and the scribes. That is nothing new to you. But I would like to explain the details. Precisely these details were once considered unimportant. This may have been valid in those times, but people back then did not consider that it would be important and significant for faithful Christians in the future, and people did not want to present it in all its details, in the way that I am now presenting it to you. What was prescribed by law, that a 12-year-old must be presented in the temple, also applied to Jesus. A special day and a special time would always be designated for this occasion. The boy who was now to be presented in the temple would be accompanied by people from the most varied locations or from far away. They had to walk for days to get to Jerusalem. Some of them lived in mountainous regions or other far distant places. You must try to imagine this. In those times, there were not these means of transportation that human beings have today. They had to travel on foot, they had to walk for days on end. And this also involved exertion. But they always made an arrangement, firstly with people from the same village, from the neighborhood and the surrounding area. They joined together in company, forming a traveling party, as it says in the scriptures, Luke 2:44. Of course, this is not meant in the way that traveling party is understood today. People in the immediate vicinity banded together. They also agreed among themselves at what time they would be at this or that place so that other families could join them. And then, in these larger groups, they would journey together to the temple or to Jerusalem. And why did they do this? They felt safer in company with each other. For in those times, too, there were thieves and bandits, and there were also wild animals. So, they walked together and felt safe. And so it was with Christ at that time. Every boy of that age was then presented to the Pharisees. He stated the name of his parents, that is, he first had to state his mother's name and then his father's. This had its reasons or has its reason, I will come back to this later. So, each individual had to present themselves to these scribes and Pharisees. This is how they were officially accepted into the congregation. And they were now a member of it. And these young people would already be given a task, each one received a task. These scribes came into conversation with them, and in doing so they could also establish what kind of ability this or that boy had. Accordingly, they assigned them a task. There were custodian duties inside and outside the temple, and it suited these young people well to perform this service. Indeed, they were active and could carry out many activities that would have troubled an older person. Thus, these young people were entrusted with tasks there. But it was not only a matter of custodian duties, these young people also had to pass on messages. They would have to deliver messages to villages or remote mountainous regions. This was also assigned to these young people. So, they became couriers, as you would call them today. They had to deliver messages here and there to members of the congregation. There were also sick people who had to be given a message or provided with assistance. These adolescents were used for such tasks. Among these youths, there were those who came from very poor backgrounds, and there were some who came from better backgrounds. Those who came from better backgrounds had a donkey with them, their journeys were thereby made easier. This was also the case with the parents who had to go to the temple in order to present their son. The noble people had their animals. But there were few of these, poor people predominated. They had to walk for days on end to reach Jerusalem. This was a day of honor, a special day for the family as well as for the boy in question. The son was officially presented in the temple, both he and his parents rejoiced. It is quite understandable that the conversations that took place there demonstrated the kind of intelligence, the kind of ability a boy had. I would now like to return to Jesus. Mary had a relative who worked in the temple and who taught Jesus how to read and write. Thus, already at the age of 12, Jesus was reasonably proficient in reading and writing. A boy would be asked questions, and he would give his answer accordingly. And questions were also put to Jesus. He, however, put questions to these scribes and to the Pharisees, and he gave them a completely different answer than the one usually given. Christians do not necessarily know that in the temple one would read from the holy book, and it would be passed from one to the other, and everyone proficient in reading had the opportunity to read a chapter and interpret it. Prophecies were written in this holy book, and all of them, so to speak, pointed to Christ and to the future. They were prophecies that the prophets had once made. Psalms were contained therein, and in these psalms, which would also be sung, there was always a reference to the redemption, to the future. Jesus could answer them from his standing, from his higher insights, and he refuted what the chief priests were otherwise accustomed to saying. In general, everyone agreed on an interpretation. There was, so to speak, just one interpretation or one similar interpretation. And I would like to ask, why? People did not dare to offer an alternative interpretation, because this would have caused a stir, and others would not have agreed with it. Only the word of the chief priests and the scribes was valid. To contradict them was very dangerous. But Jesus, filled with power, gave them the answer, the right answer, but it was not accepted by the scribes. They initially said to themselves, "This is a young man, he will eventually come to other and better insights." He was not taken particularly seriously at first, only at a later date. For he appeared regularly in the temple, and he came into conversation with these Pharisees time and again, and he often read from the holy book and made them aware of so many things, including their errors. And this did not suit these Pharisees and scribes. But now I would like to go back to the time when Jesus, as a 12-year-old, stayed in the temple. It was customary then for people to find a place somewhere in the temple to sleep for the night. They slept on the floor, and the next day they would continue their conversations. They would perhaps leave the temple for a short time to eat and then return. And so it was with Jesus. He stayed there in the temple and answered the questions that the scribes put to him. The other young people, who had particularly looked forward to this special day, grouped together. They were interested in other things than simply what was set down for them in the law. The young people came together to talk. And, indeed, this was also a special occasion. They got to know each other, they introduced themselves and said where they came from. They had also been given their responsibilities. One person had custodian duties inside or outside the temple, another was to deliver messages, yet another was to fulfill their task in some other way with a family. So they discussed these things with each other and were full of joy. There were also all kinds of things to experience outside the temple. The festival did not only last one day, people celebrated in a Middle Eastern fashion, and these young people made the most of it. Eventually it was time to go home. People again arranged a time to set off, that is, when to leave the temple or Jerusalem, so that all families could make the journey home together. This was arranged beforehand, and they met up as agreed. The young people, however, were not willing to leave at the same time as their parents. The parents were completely fine with them staying a little longer, but it was expected that they would join the company later on. After all, the older people did not walk so fast, and these young people promised to catch up with them quickly. And that is just what happened. They stayed behind a little longer and then reached their parents later on. They had to walk somewhat quicker, but that was no trouble for them, whereas it was a different matter for the parents. And this is how it became possible. When Mary and Joseph saw the other young people coming, they suddenly realized that their Jesus was not with them. And so they had to ask everyone, this whole company. They searched and hoped to find Jesus, because it was, after all, nice being together in company. As they did not find him during their searches among these people, they had to start on the long road back again. And it was precisely Mary who possessed a higher knowledge in her heart and in her soul, but she was unable to express it. It was Mary, first and foremost, who then reproached Jesus. But I would now like to return to the question of why, during the presentation in the temple, the boy first had to state his mother's name and then the name of his father. It was the same with Jesus. He said he was the son of Mary and Joseph. Thus, it was also recorded in writing that he was the son of Mary. Someone else, for example, would have to say that he was the son of Elizabeth and his father was Jacob. He was the son of Elizabeth and Jacob. The mother was named first. Why? You should think about this yourselves. 1. In accordance with the law, this was entirely normal in those days. So, Mary reproached Jesus and said to him, "Your parents have been looking for you. You made us worry, and we have walked this long, long road back again." Jesus told his mother and the father, who was also there, "Well, did you not know I must be in that which is my father's?" Luke 2:48-49, that is what he said. He was, as he claimed, in his father's house. The other young people had enjoyed themselves and then left and caught up with their families again. But Jesus stayed behind in the temple, and his parents had to make the long journey back to find him. This is the truth, and Christians can understand this better when the circumstances are explained to them in greater detail. But why do people keep such things secret? They do not want it to be true. Thus, for Christians, the fact that Christ also had brothers and sisters must also not be true. Christ really did have siblings, but it must not be true. Even though it is recorded that when Mary had to search for her son Jesus, once again, I might say, she did not go alone, but took her children with her, so that Jesus was then told, "Your mother and your brothers and sisters are outside," Mark 3:32. And what did people make of these siblings? Relatives. For what reason was Jesus not allowed to have siblings? I am trying - to explain it to you, precisely because in this respect the relationships at that time were set down in writing, but people do not want to accept it. The fact that Jesus grew in wisdom and strength as he matured is also recorded in Holy Scripture, Luke 2:52. And it really was so. Jesus was Mary's firstborn, and according to Jewish law the firstborn had special rights. Well, perhaps you can also imagine that in a family where one child has a privileged position, there are sometimes disagreements as well. There is no need to speak of conflict, I say, differences of opinion. This is completely understandable. This was also the case in other families at that time, and people did not conceal the fact. Why should it not have been the same in Jesus' family? There was thus a very strong possibility that his brothers and sisters harbored a certain jealousy of him. But I do not want to refrain from saying that this happened during the time when they were growing up. You should bring to mind your own children of that age, how they speak and act toward each other, whether everything always goes so smoothly. Why should it have been different in that family? It is clearly stated that Christ, be that as a young person, as an adolescent, or be that during his ministry, simply as a human being, was fully a human in every way. He felt the same as others. But Jesus, who grew in wisdom, also had to learn to be obedient to his Father in heaven, just as he had to be subject to his parents. It was also the case that temptations came upon him. This was permitted to the extent that he could be expected to overcome evil. He was brought up religiously according to the strictest Jewish faith, and there were many things he did not agree with. They prayed a lot in the family, and Jesus found fault with much regarding the reading of Holy Scripture. At home, too, he always had something to object to about this. He had to say to them, "That is not so." And although his siblings were younger than he, they just contradicted him. They had not yet grasped that Jesus was more than a biological brother. They considered him a biological brother. And Mary was in a difficult position. She often recollected the message that was given to her, and she clearly remembered the birth as well as the time when they had to flee. She also knew that this particular instruction had been given via a higher channel. And she knew that Jesus had an assignment, a mission, but she did not know the exact nature of it. So, on the one hand she had to defend the position of her other children, on the other hand she knew that there was something special about this Jesus. She tried, as best she could, to discuss this with Joseph, as best she could. But they were, after all, in a family with many children. In the land where Jesus lived, it was a matter of course that a family would have several children or a large number of them. To have no children, or only one child, was something of a disgrace. So why do people not want to accept this? They do not want to admit that this growing Jesus was occasionally the cause of disagreement among his siblings. This does not mean, however, that they lived in conflict with each other. Why can the whole truth not be told? Why can it not be pointed out that the growing Jesus, as it is said, grew in wisdom and strength with age, Luke 2:40. Indeed, he often left home, went into solitude to pray, and in this solitude he established the connection with his world. When he heard for the first time that he was the Son of God, it was not just a surprise for him, rather, it shook him to know that he had entered this human existence as the Son of God. The divine world had not told him all at once what kind of mission he had, all that he would have to do, what he would have to say to human beings. Only slowly, slowly was he prepared for his mission, for the time when he would step forth. But he was strengthened in good time, he was instructed from above. He had to be sure of his status, and he had to strengthen his faith in all that he was told. This was gradually explained to Jesus. Thus, he also said later on, during his ministry, "All that I tell you I have heard and seen from my Father." Yes, he not only remembered the time when he lived in his Father's kingdom, and, indeed, as king of the spirit world, rather, it was also clearly shown to his spiritual or earthly eye that he had seen his Father, that he had heard him, and that the Father had told him who he was. For he could only step forth and fulfill his mission because he was so inwardly strengthened and so deeply united in faith, only so was he able to fulfill his task. The spiritual side also wanted to create every possibility to convince him of who he was. He had to be convinced of this as a human being. To be sure, he felt urged from within and had this divine power in his entire being to better understand everything, but this alone would not suffice. Rather, as a human being, he really had to enter into a closer relationship with the Father. He should receive every proof that he truly was the one and only Son of God. The prophets were so honored in the Jewish faith, and the events surrounding the prophets were told time and again. And so, it was also given to Jesus in this way. Just as he was to experience who he was from this side, Lucifer, on the other hand, could also make his attempts. Jesus was led into the wilderness, and in this wilderness Lucifer then came and tried to persuade him, "What you believe is not true. You have dreamed it." Thus, Christ also had to listen to the other side. But Christ had previously had his experiences with the Father, and he became convinced that he was the Son of God, and this belief could not be taken away from him. In saying this, however, I wish to express the fact that Christ had to go into stillness and solitude when he wanted to have this connection with the heavenly realm, and that Mary was very often worried because he had simply disappeared. He would leave home, and people often searched for him. They searched for him before he began his teaching mission. They searched for him during his teaching mission. Mary always feared for Jesus, because she sensed, one had also tried to help her understand through higher means, through inspiration, that this Jesus still had a difficult path ahead of him. And she knew that his entire teaching, which he constantly spread, was a nuisance to the Pharisees and the scribes, and that they had the possibility to expel him and the entire family from the Jewish community. This would have been a major disgrace in those times. So, Mary was often afraid on account of Jesus. I would now like to add the following: Jesus had to work at home and earn money. He had to contribute his share to the family's upkeep. He, too, had to work. Now and then he found time, or he took the liberty, to go off. He regularly went to the temple, and, over time, people knew him. And they asked themselves, "Who is he anyway? After all, he does not have special parents. He is the son of Mary and Joseph, and there is nothing extraordinary about them." By the time Jesus began his ministry, he was already well known. Well, at home his brothers and sisters also grew up, but minor disagreements would arise time and again, because they simply had different religious views. Jesus' family once received an invitation to the wedding of a relative. The family set out and went to this wedding, and this has been recorded, for there is nothing in this to which one could take offense, to the contrary. It transpired that there was not enough wine. And Mary, who knew that Jesus had a higher task, went to him and said, "Look, they do not have enough wine." With that, she wanted to say, "Surely you can do something about it, try it." And Jesus replied to her, "My time has not yet come." John 2-4. With these words, Christ expressed the fact that the divine world, with which he was constantly in contact, had not yet prompted him to step forth. Prior to this, it had clearly been explained to him that he would receive his mission when it was time to go forth in order to teach. That is why he could say, "My time has not yet come." For he knew about the things he would accomplish, he had been told. But he said, "The time has not yet come." Christ prayed in silence and waited for an answer. And he was given one. Thus, it was the first miracle, if one should speak of miracles. And so the whole gathering experienced it, and all were amazed. And how much greater was the amazement of his brothers and sisters. They now came to have a different attitude toward their brother. They had now truly received a proof from him. And this was not the last time, it was just the beginning. And so they began to listen more to their brother. They stopped these discussions, as they had previously engaged in them, and even allowed themselves to be taught by him. This was the beginning. For during the time that Christ was active, his siblings also stood by him. But they were constantly afraid. They were afraid of the authorities, and they were also scared that something would happen to their Jesus. So you can see, dear brothers and sisters, that much has been concealed in Christian teaching, because it could not be true. Why could it not be true that Jesus had other brothers and sisters? It is surely understandable, if other siblings had been there, then there must also have been, as was also recorded, disagreements now and then. But this does not detract from Jesus, his holiness, or his person. Everything was human after all. But it was precisely this humanness that people did not want to accept. Indeed, it was not wanted from the very beginning. This humanness, as it really played out, should not have been as it was and was not allowed to be as it was. And why these lies? You should reflect on this. So, I always try to give you more detailed explanations, to present the truth to you. And I know I do not have it easy. Not everyone believes me. Whether or not they want to believe is up to them. So, dear friends, I think I have given you enough to reflect on for tonight. Be guarded and protected from all distress and every danger. God bless you. Lecture by Spirit Teacher Joseph, received in German through the medium Beatrice Brunner at the Academy of Music in Zurich, the 17th of November 1979, one in his lecture of the 1st of December 1979, Spirit Teacher Joseph explained that a Jewish man whose marriage remained childless could take a second wife. This was also the case if a wife died without leaving any male descendants. But if the second wife gave birth to a boy, the family would, in due course, proudly go to the temple to have him admitted to the Jewish congregation. The boy then had to state the name of his mother first. In this way, it was immediately known which of a man's wives was the mother of the boy. Questions and explanations. There are mediumistic writings that say Christ performed great miracles already as a child. What is to be made of this? Joseph, I can only say that it is not true. People who write such things believe that by doing so they glorify Christ. They do not have any accurate conception of Christ. So many false teachings have been introduced in this way. There are still people today who only glorify Christ in this way because so many consider Christ and God to be the same person, and they therefore expect him to have been able to accomplish such things already as a child, things that are impossible for others. Christ certainly had a special spiritual protection, but he experienced his childhood just like all other children. The rest is from the realm of fantasy. For you yourselves know when Christ performed his first miracle, if I can speak of miracles, how he answered his mother when she made him aware that there was not enough wine at that feast. His words were, "My time has not yet come." But then he prayed, and, already there, He was permitted to begin with this. 1953, when did Jesus learn he was the Son of God? Joseph, Jesus had already come into conversation with the Pharisees in the temple at the age of 12, and he interpreted scripture for them differently than the scribes were used to doing. He was inspired at that time, and knew of himself that he had a task to fulfill in the world, that he was a messenger from God, like a prophet. But he did not know at that time that he was the Son of God. He knew, however, that he was a messenger from God. This he knew. Only later, but still long before he began to teach, it is dangerous for me to specify years, I would like to say, when he was past the age of adolescence and often went into the wilderness, as his connection with God became ever closer and he entered into conversation with the divine world, then he was told that he was a high spirit. He was told this early on, but he was not yet told that he was the Son of God in so many words. This only came later. But when he found out, he did not yet reveal it to his family. For he constantly had difficulties in his family on account of his views, and he knew that were he to suddenly come to Joseph and simply say, "You are not my father, I am the Son of God," that especially his brothers and sisters would not believe him and counter, "That is just not true, because you are our brother." You really should imagine these difficulties. Mary, on the other hand, knew from the start, since the announcement of his birth, that this Jesus would be something special. But even she did not specifically know that he was the one and only Son of God. She knew he had a significant task to fulfill in life. She knew that Jesus was something like a prophet. But she did not have more detailed information. She herself was uncertain, even though she had been told at the Annunciation that he would take away the sins of the world. This had all been presented figuratively at that time, so that Mary could not properly understand what was meant by it. She could not do much with these declarations, she simply could not understand it. But when Jesus finally revealed to his family that he was the Son of God, well, there was astonishment. And they were not at all happy with this statement. After all, you have to imagine, Jesus was, as it is said, fully a human in every way. He, too, had done things in his youth for which he was rebuked, things that every young person does growing up. He was also not always so obedient. That is completely understandable. Such things, however, are not revealed in Christian doctrine. Jesus is portrayed as though he had simply been something special from infancy. And this does not correspond to the truth, for it is said, he was fully a human in every way. As Jesus grew up and became more mature, more was also demanded of him. The world of God also required more obedience from him and placed greater demands on him, and, insofar as he complied, it also had more influence on him. And if he did something wrong, he would also be rebuked by the spirit world. In a certain sense he received a punishment for it, a punishment he could hear or see when he had done something obviously wrong. In this manner, he also learned obedience. He paid more attention and listened more to his inner voice, and so he was actually educated in spirit. As he matured and grew up, and as more and more tasks were assigned to him and more could be expected of him, he was gradually told a little more. And then came the revelation, "You are the Son of God," and now he knew. But he was told, "Keep it to yourself for now, we will tell you when it is time to announce it." So he kept it to himself for a long time. I do not want to specify any years for you, because this is a very dangerous matter for me. I can only say, he knew it for a long time before he told anyone that he was the Son of God. He kept it to himself, and he then heard when the angels said to him, "Now it is time, now you can reveal it." And then he could say, "I am the Son of God." He himself received confirmation of this at his baptism by John the Baptist. Over the course of time he always received confirmation of all that he perceived through clairaudience, clairsentience, and clairvoyance. Indeed, he had to have the confirmation as a human being. He also had to be really sure that he was the Son of God. And just as he had always received confirmation of everything, so it was in this case. He received confirmation through John. and he himself heard it from this voice out of the cloud, "This is my beloved son." To be sure, he had come to know this a certain period of time before that, but he had not yet received an explicit confirmation of it. This confirmation he received at the baptism. From then on, Jesus' relationship with the spiritual world was also quite different. When the voice proclaimed that he was the Son of God, Lucifer had also heard it. That is why he thenceforth worked against Jesus with quite different means. Jesus, however, had been inwardly strengthened. He needed this inner solidity and conviction to be able to resist the temptations. Only because he was so inwardly strengthened was he able to say to Satan, "Away from me." He was able to say this, he was so inwardly fortified and then had the support of the angels. But, dear Joseph, when the 12-year-old Jesus remained in the temple and his parents were looking for him, he gave them the response, "May I not be in my father's house?" Is this sentence a later insertion? Joseph, this sentence does not at all imply that Jesus thereby identified himself as the Son of God. Indeed, every prophet can say, "May I not be in my father's house?" Board meeting of the 22nd of October 1980, this came by medium. Beatrice Brunner, 1910-1983. Deep trance medium for the world beyond. In the course of 35 years, over 2,000 lectures were given by spirit teachers through the Swiss medium Beatrice Brunner. This body of work constitutes a comprehensive source of Christian spiritual teaching, unique in its scope and scale. The spirit teachers who communicated through Beatrice delivered an exceptional diversity of instruction, in which one can find insight, guidance, and support. They are testament to the fulfillment of Jesus Christ's promise to send the Spirit of Truth, John 14:26, 16:13, who would teach all things. The Spiritual World, the English language counterpart of the Swiss journal Geistige Welt, contains a translated selection of these lectures, providing readers with answers to the fundamental questions of existence and knowledge of life in the beyond.